Hey, before we start this episode, just want to remind you that the Fearless Woman's Guide to Starting a Business is available everywhere that you like to buy books, and you can get it in paperback, Kindle, and even as an audiobook. I'll have links on where you can purchase in the podcast notes. Okay, back onto the show.
You are listening to One Broken Mom, a podcast dedicated to raising awareness about mental health, parenting, and self-improvement. I'm the host, Ami Quirconi. One Broken Mom is not a family show. It is intended for adults only and may contain adult language. Sometimes the topics are serious, but you can count on the episodes to be entertaining. Also, One Broken Mom is not offering any psychiatric or medical diagnosis. We're just here giving away useful and important information. So, if you're ready to hear real talk by real people so that we can all get better together, then you're in the right place, and welcome.
All right, everybody, welcome back to One Broken Mom. I think that marriage vows are being tested worldwide as we are in the midst of a global pandemic that has forced billions of people to stay home. And in addition, in the United States, we are at about 30 million people that are unemployed and millions of children who are trying to school from home by parents who are emotionally unequipped to take on a burden while they themselves are trying to make sense of their own world's fears and concerns, and present company included. Right now, many people are seeing perhaps their greatest strengths in their partners as well as some of their weaknesses. And people are probably questioning their choices and wondering what to do next once this world reopens. The traditional marriage vows that we are all familiar with date back to the Book of Common Prayer, printed in 1549, and they say to have and to hold from this day forward, for better, for worse, for richer, for poorer, in sickness and in health, till death do us part. But how would we know if the person that is the one that we can actually be locked up in a house with for 2.5 months during a pandemic? So that's why I have back with me on the show this season, Dr. Stan Tacton, couples expert and author of many books, including Wired for Love and Wired for Dating, to talk about his book, We Do, Saying Yes to a Relationship of Depth, True Connection, and Enduring Love. So welcome back, Stan.
Hi, Amy. How are you?
I'm good. So I actually want to find out, like, I've talked with a couple of people that are actually on the East Coast. You and I are on the West Coast. I'm in the Washington State area, which is really where, you know, the beginnings of the pandemic in the United States kind of started to happen just miles away from where I live. You're in California, though. So how are you and Tracy doing? And what's it like down in Southern California these days?
We're doing fine, other than, you know, it seems like getting older is a snowball effect that's speeding up rapidly. It's like, it's like, am I still 65 or am I 80 now? Is it weekend? Is it the weekday? When are my favorite shows on? Oh, so many of those were just canceled or just ended. Oh my God, will life be worth it if there's no Westworld? Things like that. You know, that's sort of like, things we think about, I think about. We're good. We're working. Our daughter's here working at home as well at UCLA, and we take our walks. And, you know, I'm lucky, I guess, because these are people I want to be locked at home with. So.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's fortunate. I'm glad to hear that. Southern California, I have many friends that live down there in that area, and was supposed to be going down there right before the pandemic struck. And it was just like, ugh. So the first thing that the kids and I are going to do is pile up in my car and just drive right down there and spend, I don't know, if we can get 2 weeks out of it, that would be
down
fantastic.
Here?
Yeah. Down to Southern California.
Oh, yep. Please come and visit. Be sure to stay outside.
But, yeah, I will. I'll wave to you guys from the street.
Yeah. No, we'll do the queen. We'll do the queen's way.
Right, or some finger guns.
No, come by and visit. No, that'd be very nice.
I would love to do that.
We'll now, go you out guys... to the car with our gloves
and masks on.
Yeah.
So how is this affecting, like, you do a lot of retreats and a lot of classes with couples and stuff. Oh, yeah, exactly. So how have you been adapting to that? Because it's not like the need has gone away. I'm sure there's couples, again, as what we're going to talk about here is, like, this is a whole new condition placed on relationships that normally people don't have to deal with. So what have you guys have been doing to try to still help people navigate through this?
Well, firstly, we're lucky because we're still working. Not as much, but we're still working. So all of the retreats around the country, in Spain, we were going to do one coming up at a monastery. All of that's been canceled. So all retreats have been canceled. We don't even know when those will happen. We're going to be doing an online retreat in a couple of weeks. We do all our trainings now online, in and out of the country. And that's been a learning curve, but it's been enjoyable. You know, it is a different world, isn't it? It's very surreal for everybody. And some people really love this whole thing about lockdown. Other people can't wait until they're free again. I've noticed that couples with small children are very happy. Parents often with teenagers are not so happy.
I wonder why.
Yeah, because usually there's some you know, a valve to release, like, you know, getting out of Dodge. But you know, things are getting desperate when you watch movies and you just, all these places, some of them like you'd never ever think of going ever. Now, ooh, that looks good. You know, Tanzania. Oh, that looks really good. You know, Syria. I think I'd do that. That's looking really good.
Anywhere but home, right?
Yeah. I just have a feeling that when this does lift, it's going to be very hard to get airline tickets. Anyway, maybe not. I don't know.
Yeah, no, I can see it. Like I said, I've definitely, my wish list has gone up on places to visit. I haven't added war-torn countries quite yet, but I've realized that I'll tolerate maybe a little bit more. It's like, yeah, maybe it's dangerous, but that's okay.
Yeah, it's I've gotten so used to this wildness called the COVID-19. I'm addicted to thrills and spills. So
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, no kidding.
Okay.
Well, you know, the last time that we talked about this, and we talked about this wired, right, for connection and stuff, and conflict is interesting, like, you know, being wired also for, you call it being wired for war instead of love.
Yeah.
And so when you're in a stressful situation, it seems like this may tease out more of those kind of primal instincts that we have here. So I want to talk about some of those aspects in this time that I have with you, and we're going to revisit. So for anybody hasn't listened to my other interview with Stan, you go back to our Wired for Love in season 2 and you can get to it, but we are going to tackle some of the things that we touched on there and explore them. And one of the things that I love is the term couple bubble and describing that. Now, can you talk about what a couple bubble actually is? And it's not you being locked in your house together. It's something that's, you know, a little bit more holistic or spiritual than that. So let's start with the importance.
It's more like a couple safe house.
Right.
a couple bubble basically is, and there's a lot of other metaphors I'm sure we'll do just fine, is the idea that you and I are choosing to be in a kind of orbit of interdependence, where we depend on each other for basic things that we agree on, like survival. Yeah, we're going to protect each other from, you know, from each other and everybody else. We're going to protect each other in public and private. You know, we're going to make agreements that make our relationship based on principles of fairness and justice and collaboration and cooperation. We're going to do things for each other that nobody would really want to do unless they got paid a lot of money, because we're entering into a social contract or a series of social contracts, something that vows would have been but never were, because these are not out of a book. These are ideas that you and I sculpt from the ground up. What shall we be? Why shall we be? Who and what do we serve as a couple? Where are we pointing? Why there? Where do we want to be as a couple in 5 years, in 10 years? What do we think of ourselves as a couple? Are we the center of the universe? Do we provide other people with what we are providing each other as well? So, you know, these are very specific to the two people creating it. And the bubble means that they're insiders and everybody else would be an outsider unless they decide to bring them in. So, but they decide, not one of them. Mm-hmm. So you and I are beholden to each other. We have agreements others don't have with us. Therefore, we have to abide by those agreements or we suffer. Therefore, we come first in all things in terms of decision-making, adjudicating, in terms of deciding what we're going to do. We govern each other and everybody. We're leaders, right? And so it's an idea, it's a way of framing, it's a way of thinking. And here's the problem. This idea has been around since the beginning of civilization, but so has the idea that don't tread on me. I want my freedom. I want my independence. Don't tell me what to do. I bow to nobody. I am the queen. I am the king. There is no other. And we have that idea, especially in the West. Right? Give me liberty, give me death. Right? We're not that kind of culture. Problem with that is that our culture also sets up the way we are in our love relationships. Mm-hmm. And if we're set up as one-person systems, which we are in our culture, that relationship is going to be doomed. It cannot last. And the reason it cannot last is quite simple. Anytime you and I play consistently for ourselves and ourselves only, and not the relationship, we create a system that becomes too unfair and too unjust and too insensitive too much of the time. That creates ill feeling, bad memories, and eventually threat on a biological level. And then we go to war and then we end. Or we stay together and we make everybody miserable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's interesting. And I, you know, selfishly, I want you to revisit it because I love hearing you describe it because it's just, it's, I said this the last time that we talked, like it is the epitome of everything that I think if you ask anybody what they truly want, but like you pointed out, it is difficult to achieve. Yes. And I, from my personal experiences with this, I am a very independent person and have realized my independence even more so in the last couple of years and actually in just the last few months. But remembering that you want that, you know, I want this, like, I want this couple bubble. I want this type of a relationship. How do I be independent? How do I still have some autonomy over my dreams, my hopes, my goals, my aspirations, you know, the things that are my energy levels and my energy sources of fuel. How do I do both of those things? And it's been an interesting, back and forth. And so when you work with couples on this, again, when you have somebody that feels, and I know we touched on this before, it doesn't mean an erosion of self to do this. You know, I think of it as there's me, there's him, and then there's we, you know, right here in the middle. Like I get to still be me, he gets to still be him, but where do we, like, where's the handshake between the two of us? And
as my friend Dan Siegel would say, we, mm-hmm. we.
We. Right?
Not a me, it's not a we, it's a we.
Yeah.
It's, you know, like everything else in human life, we're supposed to move towards complexity unless there's trauma, unless there's some other mitigating factor that scares us away from being able to develop. But we're supposed to move towards complexity. That's additive, not subtractive. And so you and I, getting together and joining forces is additive. It's not subtractive. We're supposed to be two independent people. Now, there are a lot of people walking around who claim to be independent, but their independence came by way of neglect. That's not true independence. That's a neglectful oriented one-person system that distances and that is afraid of losing their independence. Someone who's truly independent isn't afraid of losing their independence. They meet another person who also wants their independence. How do two people work together and be interdependent? Well, interdependent in the same way that cops are in a cop car, right? No dating service put us together. We were assigned each other. We may not even like each other. We come from different backgrounds. Most of those backgrounds aren't so great. But we have one thing that binds us, and that is if we don't watch each other's backs, we're both going to get killed or harmed in some way. And we're in a culture that insists that we are devoted to each other. So we become each other's go-to person. We tell each other things. We do things for each other. We spend time with each other in such a way that it actually can harm our marriages. But the example here is that there's a shared vision or shared mission, a shared purpose. We protect each other out there in the dangerous world that nobody else but us seems to know. So this is done around the world where people are thrown together or come together because they must, maybe they need to share, join forces against another foe. Maybe they need to share resources in order for both communities to thrive. But they have a reason. It's not, because we're in love with you. It's not about love. It can't be. It has to be something meatier. It has to have purpose to it. Because feelings such as love are transient, and anyone who's hinging their relationship based on that is in for a rough ride. Mm-hmm. Right? So we do these things for each other to survive and thrive, and we ensure that to each other. I ensure your safety and security at all times. I ensure that you get your dreams met and that you get mine met. And this is what we do for each other because we can, and because the alternative we both decided is not so good. And that's how people do it.
Mm-hmm. So when couples are deciding what their, I'm going to call it a mission statement because that sounds so sterile and corporate, but it is kind of a mission statement. You know, sometimes we start, like I said, I read the vows at the beginning and we had talked about this before. You know, you have these overarching generalized principles, but, you know, what is the thing that couples tend to come back to? Like, again, what's a mission statement that seems to work? Because sometimes they get together out of necessity for, I want to support this person in everything they do, or, you know, our careers brought us together, or, you know, we both love to travel. You know, I mean, whatever some kind of, element is, but I guess what I'm trying to figure out is how do you build and how does a couple look past that, something that seems superficial is why they came together and find a greater purpose that aligns them up as a team?
It's a great question. And by the way, the first part of that, what do most couples tell me is nothing. They have nothing. They don't know why they're together.
Oh, well, I love him. Because I was like, why are we together?
I love him. I love her. We got married young. We got married because we both wanted a family. Okay. And then they stop being lovers and they're parents. And then they're complaining that there's no love. Because you're not a couple, right? They never were a couple. So how we define what we're doing, you wouldn't go into a career without having an idea of why and where you're pointed. You wouldn't start a company. You wouldn't start a country. You wouldn't do anything that's a commitment without knowing why you're doing it and what the purpose is, and get together with that other person you're joining with and come up with something. So most of the people that I see, including myself, tend to think too small. In relationship, in anything that you're building, the people who do well think big. When I say think big, they think about we want to travel, we want to go to these places. We want to raise wonderful children, but we want to stay a great couple. We want to keep this relationship alive. We want to be of service to other people. We want to be involved in the larger community in some way. But it still comes down to the center of the universe. Everyone depends on us being okay. And if we're not taking good care of each other, everything we want will go to shit. And people who understand this, that is the thing that they fear the most, is that the human proclivities, the human base nature, which is to do whatever we want to do when we want to do it, to be fickle and opportunistic and moody, as we move through time, right? I want a younger, I want older, I want shinier, I want whatever. It makes us very unreliable creatures. And so then we have to rely, we have to look to purpose and character as a remedy. Why would I be in the house with someone who isn't the person? So let me challenge the person. There is no the person. The person is my person, the person I chose and chose me. We have a duty to each other, and it's not a depression duty. It is a lively, a life-giving, something to feel grateful for at the end of the day. We serve each other. Why? Because we decided it's the best course of action. We've been there, done that. And so it isn't the person. It is how we've agreed to do business and whether we enforce it. So you and I tell each other everything. We don't have to. We could decide to not tell each other everything. As long as we agree, it's fine. But let's say we decide to tell each other everything. We don't hold back. And we can argue why that's a good idea. Not just a good idea because you like it, but why I want to do that for me. Why that is a better alternative, even though it's a pain in the ass and I don't want to get in trouble and I don't want you telling me, you know, criticizing what I want or think. But the greater good is we tell each other everything. Life is easier. We stick to that even when we don't feel like it. And that's what principles are. That's what these agreements are. They're not, everybody's great when they're feeling good. Mm-hmm. The worst person on the planet is a nice person at some point. You just don't want to be there seconds later. Everyone is good when they're good. And when they're not good, they're really bad. And now we're talking about state of mind other than being comfortable, safe, happy. What about if I'm in pain? Well, I may not be pleasant to be around. What if I'm depressed? I'm definitely not pleasant or highly anxious, right? What if I don't like you today? Do I then not do the things I agreed to? Mm-hmm. The safety in our agreements is that we hold each other's feet to the fires that we created and we agreed to, and we enforce it. We enforce it ourselves because, oh, I don't like you today, and I don't feel like I want to do this for you because you. Right now, you disgust me. I hate you. But then I think, okay, wait a second. I've done this before. Tomorrow, I'll probably like you. Oh, wait, you have to do this for me when you feel the same way. I'm in. I'll do it. Okay, so the idea here is we craft these ideas, the purpose and the meaning for the times we do not feel like it, which is a lot. Mm-hmm. And that's what people are missing. Mm-hmm. People just want to feel good, and they just want to count on when the weather's good. The weather don't stay good. What do you do when it's terrible weather? And are you reliable? Mm-hmm. Now, if people, I don't care how they feel about their partner, if they were that dedicated to their agreements, they wouldn't be having any problems. Mm-hmm. Just annoyances. People are annoying. All people are annoying and disappointing.
They are. All people. Well, so you talk about, and of course, right now is a perfect time. Like I said, you know, couples are probably being tested in all of that because, yes. You know, I think there's a lot of surprise for folks that are able to kind of get through life pretty well. And then a situation like this has us all in a hyper aroused state of fear, even if we're not.
Yeah. Or the other direction, depressed and hypo aroused, can't get out of bed.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So many things. And I know just from seeing people just in my own community and, you know, everybody's beautifully different, unique nervous systems all reacting so differently to this whole thing. But we are probably seeing something in each of us and ourselves that we've never seen before, you know, unless we were, you know, somebody that happened to be on the East Coast and had to go through the intensity and the trauma, or remember the intensity and the trauma of 9/11, right? Yeah. 9/11 is another one of those triggering moments, but that's already been, you know, almost 20 years ago since that's actually happened. So it may not be recent. So we talk about, I'm going to take credit for this. No, you talk about in the book, we're talking about the negative brain, right? And that it's probably like on high alert right now more than it ever is just in the day-to-day traumas and stresses. What do we need to know about the way our brain kind of behaves?
It's called unseen fear. It's been studied quite a bit. So when we see fear, like a lion coming at us, or we see a rattlesnake, or we see somebody who looks like they're going to rob us, that's fear that we see and we can act, right? We can act. Then there's unseen fear. And that's the fear that is all around and we don't know where it is. The virus is invisible. Who has it? Where is it? Is it located at the front door? Is it in my car? That keeps our nervous systems at sort of peak performance in a bad way, because the neuroendocrine stress system, that basically means the brain and hormones that work together to keep us on alert, are very expensive, and they cause a lot of wear and tear on the brain and the body. So to stay in this state for long periods is bad for our health. So that's one thing. The same thing, by the way, 9/11, unseen fear. Is our neighbor a terrorist? When is the next plane that's overhead going to come down and hit my house? Unseen fear, turns the faucet, you know, the spigot is always on. And so, yes, people are angsty. There's an existential threat out there. But there are other existential threats that we have to add. Other than we're going to die, we don't know why we're here, life is meaningless, and we're all alone. Those are existential threats, right? Party on. But we have to add another one. And the other one is in the human primate world. We suffer greatly if the relationship that we have, that is our attachment relationship, if we are unsure whether it will exist tomorrow, that also causes terrible, terrible health problems. So you and I are not getting along at home in lockdown. And we spend lots of time away from each other, not talking, not making up. There's a part of our brain that is aware that we may not exist. That is what leads to an early death. That is what causes a whole host of problems. So people are having to learn at this time. Well, I'm trying to get people to learn at this time. They cannot afford more than 30 minutes of disconnection when there's a break in the relationship for any reason. They don't have to sit down and talk for 2 hours. They don't have to do anything. All they have to do is say, "We're okay. You know, I hate you. I want to punch you in the face, but we're fine. We're fine." Go to bed angry at night. We're not talking to each other, but our toes touch. That's a signal. We're okay. That's all we need for that system to shut down. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so we have to understand that the stress we're under is life is different. We don't know what the future is. A lot of people have strong feelings about the government right now, mimicking the worst trauma in homes in childhood ever. Mm-hmm. All these unknowns plus a different lifestyle, right? Everything's different. None of that's really great for human beings because we're having to adapt. I would not add to that having the war being in the foxhole at home. This should be a time to think big and to gather senses and to realize this is now when you work together. This is when you work together to make the relationship easy and peaceful, because the world clearly is never going to give that. Mm-hmm. And the message, the lesson should be, this is always, the coronavirus has always been here, right? Not necessarily COVID-19, but a meteorite, a nuclear war, terrorism, heart attack, cancer, God forbid, whatever it is. Death is always near. We don't know what's happening. Life is indifferent, and it's certainly not predictable. And so now we're aware of it, not asleep. Now's the time to start building our resilience in our relationships and learning how to get along with other people, particularly the people we chose.
Mm-hmm. Right? When you talked about the reaching out part and the we're going to be okay, like I literally got goosebumps because I know that sense of disconnection and the relief that comes from something like that, especially for some people out there that are used to having a break from a parent. And then that fear that the parent's going to leave, right? Like it is a very childlike fear of like, oh my gosh, my person, you know, whether it's mom or it's my husband or wife or boyfriend, girlfriend, they're not here for me now. And that's just an instant like heart sinking, stomach emptying, feeling to it. But you're right. Like I just need to, you know, I just say that out to life. Like I just need to know it's all going to be that it's fine.
Just okay.
Not
just
right okay. now. Yeah. We don't need to fix it now, but I just need to know that we're okay. You're not leaving. I'm not leaving. You know, whatever it is, I'm going to go be mad, go do my
thing.
We're good.
You haven't heard the last of this, but we're good.
Right. Yeah. Right. And so this kind of leads into what you talk about, which is attachment, right? Like how do we all relate to each other? Because sometimes we want that, but a person who might want to withdraw has more difficulties reaching it versus a person who's becomes more anxious, it starts grabbing for it and we can start pushing away from each other
right.
instead of making conscious efforts to just connect in a way that's authentic to who we are. And I think that's where I feel like couples don't know what their authentic natural survival move might be to run or it might be reach, right? And then those come into conflict there too. So how do you talk
Great
about
question.
Like the attachment and how that can kind of get in the way of that. Cause I feel it. I feel like the basic thing is I just need to touch your hand and we're good. I just need to hear that, say that, but that can be a canyon to cross when we don't know what we might be more inclined to do. So can you talk?
If you study babies, you see that all babies, unless there's something wrong, all babies do proximity seeking. They look, they reach, they cry, they speak, they make sounds. To their caregivers, right, for proximity. And they use what's called contact maintenance. They touch, hold, and, right? And this is just built in to us. When we aren't this way, or we do it too much, that speaks to a history of insecurity in childhood, of either neglect or of alternating come here, go away, come here, go away, right? So we have to understand that when people are clingy, they're clingy because they feel anxious, insecure about their relationship. When people are distancing, it's because they feel anxious, avoidant of a relationship based on memories of what happens when I depend on another person. I either get exploited, used, I have my stuff taken, I'm never really seen or understood, I get yelled at, criticized, judged, I have to be a performance pony, or I'm the one who takes care of everybody, I am the loved one, yet then I'm punished and people are angry and they withdraw from me and I feel abandoned all the time. So, you know, we have to understand this comes from memory. We're not born with it. We may have some proclivities, you know, some genetic predisposition, but we're not, you know, this is an environmental memory of not feeling secure and safe in a relationship. Not a problem. As long as people understand when they pick each other based on recognition. You and I pick each other. It's not an accident. We recognize things in each other. That's a good thing. Nature does that, right? And the chances are very, very high that I have the bite that fits your wound and you have the bite that fits my wound. And if we are not smarter, we're just going to play that out until we can't do it anymore. But if we're smarter, we have an opportunity to heal those attachment wounds by understanding that we're more alike than we think, and that only the two of us can do something different that will begin to mollify those memories and change the trajectory of the relationship. So you're someone who distances. Well, you seem to be groovy in your own room with your phone or whatever it is you do. I know you, and I know where you come from. I know you were neglected on an attachment level. I'm not going to let you do that for very long. I'm going to respect that. I don't think you're bad. I understand what it is. I won't hold you too long. I understand you hate that. I won't call your name from another room. I won't ask you questions like, what are you doing? Or where are you going? Because I know that's a threat to you. I know how to handle you. I know the animal I'm with, and I know how to get what I want without triggering your fear or without you feeling ashamed that I don't accept you as you are. That changes you. I'm somebody who's clinging. I want to know where you're going. I want to be with you, be with me, be with me, be with me. Right? But you understand me. Yes, I'm annoying. But you also understand where the fear comes from. And you know that you can do something that cares for yourself and me at the same time. You can have your space, but you can also say, sweetheart, I love you so much. I'm going to take a bath a little bit, and then let's get together and do this. So that I know you. I know what scares you. I know what you want. And I'm going to get what I want, but not at your cost. That's skill. That's clever. That's social emotional complexity. How do I create win-win situations with you when you're unreasonable or seemingly unreasonable? But I know you. I know how you work. That is when people do great. And it doesn't matter whether they're an island or a wave or a duck or a goat. It's just, I know you. I know the person I'm with. Mm-hmm. And I feel great because I'm really good at you. I'm not good at a lot, but I'm good at you. And you benefit, I benefit. And we have to understand, whether we're parents or mechanics or whatever, we don't like that which we can't handle well. If a baby that's colicky has GERD, we don't like the baby, right? I can't calm her. I can't calm him. I don't like the baby. Can we get a return? I wanted a dog that licks. This dog don't lick. Well, I got the wrong breed. But you know what I'm saying? We only like that which we are really good at. And that is the real problem, is that you and I picked each other correctly. Nature doesn't make a mistake. But you're still, because of recognition, you still have something I never learned how to cope with. Your anger. I never could. You know, I couldn't with my mother, I couldn't with my dad, and I can't with you. I don't like you. So we're faced with challenges as adults on how to finally parent each other and manage each other and not be afraid. But that takes big thinking. That takes seeing a big picture and having a vision and knowing this is what we're going to do. Imperfectly, but we're going there. Mm-hmm. We're going there. We're going to make each other better. Mm-hmm. With lots of backsliding.
Right. And a lot of grace.
Do you understand?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. It is what people have been doing on their own for centuries. Some people needed help with therapy. Mm-hmm. Other people just saw it in their families. They know how to do it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But it's all about safety and security.
Yeah. So when we talk about the importance then as we're learning somebody, let's imagine we can't actually articulate what our fears are, right? I think one of the things that I hear and see you and read that you talk about, which is then maybe start with trying to understand cues, you know, the cues that people give that maybe, because we give them off and maybe don't even are aware that we're, you know, our posturing, facial expressions and things like that, which then lends itself to how important eye contact can be in relationships, because there is information to be gathered through that, you know, through that exchange right there that can also bridge the big canyon of getting to know our partner and stuff. How do couples do that? Like, let's say in a pandemic where they're a couple not living together right now, and they're actually not, you know, seeing each other all the time.
Phone sex, Zoom sex, no, Zoom with eyes, FaceTime. It's really, you know, a lot can be said that's not great about our technology, but there's a lot that is great, right? I mean, to be able to see another person is something I never grew up with, and it does make a difference to see the other person as long as it's not glitchy. Mm-hmm. So I think FaceTime, you know, even though we live together, my wife and my daughter and I, we WhatsApp each other all the time with goofy faces and voice messages. Oh, I love you. You know, little things like that, that create a sense of being tethered, right? I'm connected. We're connected to each other. We're our go-to people. Even when we're not together, I'm thinking of you. I can reach out to you anytime and you'll answer, hi. And so will I. The world won't do that. Nobody else is expected to do that. We'll do it because we say we will. The rest of the world won't. But we also understand why we'll do that. And we've already talked about why it's in our best interest, even though it might be an inconvenience at times. So we're the constant. This has gone on for centuries, you know, during Ireland went through many periods where the men had to leave. There was no money, and they had to be on the continent somewhere or at war. And there was all these songs, haunting songs of you know, being away from each other, and so many beautiful songs like letters writing to each other. So there's a way that we can stay connected mentally, psychologically, and even now with technology, and really make use of it. Mm-hmm. The more you can contact each other in any way, I think the more it strengthens your immunity, your immune system. Because of our attachment needs as human primates. It also gives us a sense that that we have somebody there on our side no matter what, and we're there for them at any time. That does something. Mm-hmm. That does something. If you can put each other to bed at night, if you're a similar time zone, talk to each other at night, even wake up in the morning together, there's so many things that people can do that creates a constancy. Because that's what we're wanting, is something, a constant. You're my constant. Everything else is changing. And as we move through time, you're my constant. We're both aging, we're both changing, but you're still my constant. So all of this is basically in our heads if we decide it to be. We choose it to be this way. It is what we say it is. People don't get it. Reality, just like the existentialist said, is exactly what you say it is, because no one can prove anything. So if you and I say that our relationship is the greater good, our relationship is our Godhead, our relationship is our ecosystem. It supplies us water, air, food in order for us to grow and to be better than we ordinarily would. If we create that mythology, it's true. Because mm-hmm. if there's nothing else about Homo sapiens that's really grand is our ability to make shit up. No, I mean that.
Right. It's true, though. Right. Yeah. No, yeah. The storytelling.
We're always doing it.
Yeah. We're always creating narratives and reframing and explaining and storytelling.
Make up something that is higher than yourselves. Make up something that makes the relationship a higher value, something to strive for, something that makes you a better person, something that you live and work for, something you would die for, something you would give that shiny object up for this old, dull object right now. Why? Because it makes me a better person. This is my devotion. This is my study. This is what I choose. Mm-hmm. That is character. Mm-hmm. And so we have a long road to hoe here. You know, getting, you know, my job is not easy.
No.
You know, nor is what I'm talking about. I have to practice it and fail every day. Mm-hmm. It's a practice. This is not an ideal. This is, there's so many examples of this. I mean, do you know that there are people who have been enemies for life that are like brothers and sisters now, because they found a common reason to be. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are examples across history. People found this over and over again by necessity. The problem is that we don't think we have a reason to do this because we think we're safe all the time. This period should show us we're not.
Right.
That so all we have is our relationships.
And so, you know, that makes me think again, whether or not couples that might be sitting here, together, reexamining their relationships because of the stress and the strain, and they're finding again, like I said at the beginning, so many of these weaknesses, which are really yes. just who they are, right? We're just seeing
people.
We're just seeing the other person, all of them, you
it's
know?
It's people.
Right. And so is it possible? I know the answer, but I'm going to ask you it anyways. But, is it possible that a couple can make it work? And
yes.
how? What is the baseline criteria for any couple that's struggling right now to say that we are going to do this? Because some couples won't make it. This is a revealing process. Some won't, but right. some will. And any can, but they have to do what?
Well, what, this is going to sound pejorative and also not helpful, but in a phrase, grow up. All of us have to grow up and give up this idea of selfness for a we-ness, that we are interdependent creatures. This idea of full autonomy and independence is a mythology of the West. Mm-hmm. We are absolutely dependent creatures. We can prove that over and over again, but we're in denial, and that our relationships are of our creation, but we're asleep, operating automatically 99% of the day with cheap memories, so we can conserve energy. We're not really paying attention. We're not really there looking at our partner. When I look in your eyes, I mean, I haven't for a while, I start to see someone I haven't been seeing. I've had a picture in my head of Ami based on memory, but I haven't looked. And so it takes effort. I have to want to overcome. I have to want to be to have more agency in my life instead of following a plan that was set for me by my parents and my parents' parents and their parents' parents, right? We are doing exactly every day, all day, what we know, and what we know is what we've experienced, and we do not question it at all. We just do it automatically, reflexively. If we really want to create something new, we have to want to do that. We have to want to be two generals, you and I, and both of us to create something that's ours. So I would say to people, rather than try to keep bailing water out of a sinking ship, let it sink. Just build a new ship. Build it based on what you already know, which is what not to do. Right? What people don't realize when they've ruined their relationships and they go on to new ones, they've solved one problem for another. Now there's an unknown. It takes a while to get to know somebody, and now you have to build up data in order to know who you've got and what you're going to do and how you're going to correct. If you and I did horrible things to each other, and we decided to, we could use all that data and say, we're not doing that anymore. And this is what we're going to do. We're going to do this. We're going to reverse engineer it, and we're going to work with each other, and we're pointing in that direction, and we're going there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's power, and people do not believe in it, and they don't believe in that. If you point, both you point in the same direction, you'll go.
Well, I think too, sometimes people think that there's a better fit or a better match.
It's ridiculous.
Right. Right. Yeah.
That they're easier. They're easier people, but there's always something hard about them.
Mm-hmm. Right. Of course. Right. You know, to say that growing up, you know, I think a lot of people would sit there and go, well, I am an adult. I am a grown up. But yeah, But you'd be surprised how often little you gets triggered in to, you know, and that's what I feel like. Hey, it's just little me used to, you know, trying to go hide in her room so that she wasn't drawn into drama or whatever she didn't want to get drawn into, is the one that I have to like say, this isn't that situation. You're safe. It's fine. We're good. You know, and keep trying to, you know, kind of reengage, you know, in a positive way.
Not only that, I would reframe that. And that is, not only did you hide the room to stay out of something, you're now locked away in a way that's unfair because there's no reason to be in your room. Let them go into another room. You couldn't do that as a kid. You couldn't say, hey, you know what? You're noisy. You're scaring me. You go out of the house and keep it peaceful. You couldn't do that. But as an adult, you know, nobody puts baby in the corner, right? So no more hiding in rooms. And same with your partner, no more doing what you did to survive and adapt as a child. We do it our way. Mm-hmm. And we do it the way it suits us. And I, you know, here's what I want and I expect. Generally, when people really talk about this, they come to the same things mm-hmm. if they really think it through. Mm-hmm. You know, they really think it through. People generally want the same things. Mm-hmm. And that's where you want to get to.
Yeah.
So you can both point there and then you push each other.
Is this the right time for couples to start doing this kind of stuff or is it still too raw and sensitive? It probably depends on the couple though, right?
When is it the wrong time for a relationship? If that's in our DNA, mm-hmm. when is the wrong time?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Never.
I guess personally, if you feel, you don't feel like doing it, then it's the wrong time. But if you have to ask the question, is it the wrong time? Then the answer is no, of course not.
Mm-hmm. Any couple.
Wrong time to eat when I feel like vomiting. No, I'm not going to eat. but otherwise, when's the wrong time to eat? Mm-hmm. For me, obviously. Never.
Everyone's enjoying eating right now.
Oh, God. Some people are getting thin and some people are getting fat. As you really watch it.
This will be fun to listen back on some of these episodes recorded right now, just because, and that's why I appreciate talking about and bringing this in is, it's like a time capsule, right? Like I can't wait to reflect on how it's been different now. For people that are single that kind of just got their whole dating life put on hold, you know, what are you saying? What would you say to them right now? The doors are going to open back up. We are going to be allowed back out into space and engaging with people now that we've had this type of an experience.
We think, by the way.
Yeah, we think. What should people think about doing now as they go back in and they start to meet people? You know, what are some things that they should be asking and questions they should, you know, kind of wonder about themselves as well as about other people that they're meeting to decide if this is a person that they can actually like, hey, let's just say like in 5 months, this thing locks us back up again. Are you somebody that we can we do this together?
And we do, I describe about Sherlocking and vetting people also in a book called Wired for Dating. I wrote mm-hmm. that too. Now is the time to think not about the right person, but what is the relationship, the right relationship? What must the relationship be? Make your lists. And as you make your lists, make sure you're not writing it as I want and you should, right? Person X, right? This is what we do. And this is what we don't do. We put the relationship first. I'm making this up. You can decide whatever you want. We're polyamorous, if that's what you're wanting. We're monogamous, if that's what you're wanting. Just be prepared to defend it. We make each other better. We support each other's dreams. The left hand knows what the right hand is doing. We tell the truth. I mean, this is how you write that out. And envision it. And as you are vetting people, you keep an eye out, an ear out for whether this person fits into that schema of this is what I want to build with another person who I can depend on. Are you dependable, first of all? Are you a liar? Are you somebody who has integrity? Do you set, does it sound like you want these things and you're tired of those things? That's how you do it. The image of the relationship is forefront, not the image of Mr. or Miss Right. That'll lead you astray because nature, make no mistake, nature has no plan for a long-term relationship. It only has a plan for making new human beings. Period, full stop. It does a really good job of that. Mm-hmm. It does not care about your long-term relationship. So what you do is you play it easy. Dating, if you're really learning how to Sherlock people, how to learn about people, should be fun, even if you're with somebody who's boring. There is no boring person, right? If you're really watching, paying attention, watching to their moves, how they talk when they don't move. If you are Sherlock Holmes and you're watching them, it's fun, it's interesting, you get closer to people, you get to like them, you may never go out with them, but it wasn't a waste of time. Because you're practicing for what you're going to do when you do find that person, because you're not going to stop Sherlocking them. You're not going to stop being present and attentive. That's mm-hmm. the poison that we have to watch out for. It's nature's automation. Mm-hmm. And this is really important. You parade this person around to your peeps and make sure that your friends are male, female, old, young, and that you let them know in advance, I want feedback, honest feedback on what I look like when I'm with this person. Do I look and seem like myself? Do you like us together? And then what do you think of this other person? That's the way it's been done forever, and it hasn't been done mostly in our lifetime. we cannot be trusted to fully vet ourselves because we're on drugs in the beginning of a relationship and we're blinded. Our judgment is truly off because of the chemicals that are in our brain because nature just wants us to, you know, do it. Mm-hmm. That's where we have our social network that goes, doesn't really fit in your culture here. I don't see you. You look like you're straining too much. You don't seem like yourself. You don't look happy. You know, this person, I don't like them. My kids don't like them. The dog hates it. Yeah.
Dogs know.
Dogs know.
They do.
But we've always vet, because the person coming in has to be familiar enough to fit. And if they are too outside of the culture, it never works. Mm-mm. There's always a problem. Because we're integrating people, community, and so you have a lot of young people who hate their community and then want to be back in it, and they can't because the person they chose, they've created too much problem. The whole family, mm-hmm. the well has been poisoned. So yeah, these are important things to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, I like the, you know, when I coach businesses about, you know, there is a purpose, right? A lot of even people when they decide to go into entrepreneurship, which we just briefly talked about, you know, nobody starts a business without knowing why, right? But many people do. They start a business with the intent of it making a product or whatever it is, but not with their own sense of what is this going to do for me? What's this a vehicle for me in my life? And so, you know, what you're saying there, which is, you know, just imagine what you want the relationship to be. Like, what is mornings and nights and days and weekends look like? What should it be? What does this person, you know, you together out, you know, in the world? And it is like I use the word mission statement. It is like the mission, because it is like the other things do go away. Jobs go away. We're seeing that. Your job isn't a guarantee. It's not, you know, it's not the thing to hinge your life on. Even, you know, even for a person like myself, I've reinvented my career many times because that's not a guarantee. Doesn't matter what my degree was in, doesn't matter all that. But the interpersonal, we all know that, like your family, like yes. kids, your partner, yes. those yeah. are the things that sustain all of that. And so that bigger vision is something that I don't think a lot of people are familiar with, sitting down, doing an exercise or an activity like that. But right now a couple could do that and say, when we come back and this world turns the corner into a different way, how are we stepping together into this world together? Like, what does that look like for us? What are we going to do differently? And for a person to do that with a relationship, I know that was an exercise that I did. It was like, finally, I'm done with this, because you're right. Like, you know, going after hot, 6 foot, brown hair, whatever the stupid metrics are that people use for, you know, to decide like he has to be this or she has to look like this, or, you know, are meaningless. Cause even that, like that changes, right? Hair colors change, skin wrinkles, hair goes, weight changes.
Youth, beauty, everything.
Right.
Sex is good. Now it's never, right. You know, everything can and will happen. What's the constant? And it's what you're doing for each other on a day-to-day mm-hmm. basis. Mm-hmm. That's it. That's earned love. That's a kind of love that comes out of fealty, devotion, respect, gratitude. Mm-hmm. That's real. The other stuff is in our heads. Mm-hmm. The other, yeah, one is deed. Is a daily thing of radical devotion that you both do, and it's earned. That takes some time to do. That the first part of love just gets you in the door. It does not take you anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Right, and the rest of that is a conscious effort. You know,
it's like very you said. Conscious. Yeah.
yeah. The part, you know, kind of the last thing that I want to touch on before we wrap up here was, you know, you talked about the social proof, and I think a lot of people do dismiss that because we've all been there. We've all had that guy where somebody or gal where somebody walked up and said, "Man, you could do better," and you blow them off. And so for people that's been their tendency to do that. Yeah. What do you say to people when they've got like this terrible history of blowing off what their social proof or what their community tells them about, you know, their other partners? Like, why would somebody I wonder why. You said the chemicals, right? Like, but I've blown off yeah. a lot of people that have told me like, that guy's no good. Like, you can do better than that. Oh no. And I, you know, whatever the reasons are. And I know other people that have stuck with people long enough, even though everybody has said no.
Part of it has to do with youth. Part of it has to do with our culture that, you know, from the romantic period, my love is more true than anybody else. And just doesn't understand that we're all embedded in community. And so it's not, we pair bond in herds. We're just not pair bondy fully. We don't go off into the wilds by ourselves. We live in concentric circles of social networks. And so that's important and we don't use them. That doesn't mean that we take everyone's word for it. A lot of people have an axe to grind. You have to be careful who you're asking. Mm-hmm. If you're asking somebody who hates the opposite sex, you may not want to do that. Or somebody who just got divorced and is bitter or some whatever. Somebody who doesn't want to lose their best friend is going to lead you wrong. So, I mean, be aware of who you're asking and get a wide view. And you're doing it not because you're someone who can't think for themselves. It's just the opposite. You're someone who's smarter than that and knows how to use your resources to make sure that what you're deciding to do is making sense with the minds available to you, right? Mm-hmm. Not just your own. People think they have a bad picker. There is no bad picker. There's just the phenomenon of I get drunk in lust with you. And now I'm attached and now I can't, you'll pry my dead fingers from you, even though you're the exact wrong person for me and you'll do me terrible things. So it's not smart. Mm-hmm. So youth, you know, I don't want to know what my parents think. I'm trying to get away from my people, you know, don't tell me what to do. And people pay the price.
Right. So. Or the classic, they just don't know them the way I know them.
And that's the point.
Right. Yeah. Oh my gosh.
I had somebody here once who came in, a well-known analyst from back east somewhere. And after 30 some years, found out her husband was cheating on everybody. I mean, with her friends, you know, everybody. And, so. And she was devastated. And I asked her, I said, did you vet this gentleman with your friends? And she says, yes, all my girlfriends adored him. They thought he was the cat's meow. And I said, what about the men? She said, they thought he was a creep. And I said, well, why don't you listen to the men? Anyway, so yeah. So people will pick things up that we don't want to see. Mm-hmm. But we're talking about a future. Both people are supposed to do this. Mm-hmm. Also be aware of somebody who doesn't have anybody. Mm-hmm. Everyone seems dead or some other country. If you can't meet your partner to be anyone, I'd say that's a red flag.
Yeah, right. Well, I will protect myself. Like, I have a best friend, and I did march my person in front of like my best friend, like right away. I don't have like a giant circle of people, but it was like, okay, I've got three people that matter that you need to see and meet. So anyways.
Just if you're Sherlocking, when your partner and you are out anywhere and you're listening on the phone, you can get a good sense of how somebody is reacting to them, mm-hmm. and what they do under stress. There's all sorts of ways to find things out.
Mm-hmm. Just have to be, like you said, a little bit more complex and a little bit more mindful. And I think that it is definitely easier.
You're there, you're present, but you're also, I'm watching. I'm watching. I'm noticing. I notice everything. I'm noticing everything. I notice how you pick up your food, notice what your hand you're using. It's interesting when people start noticing you do that, people either really love that or they go, I'm really afraid to be with you because you're noticing everything. Mm-hmm. But that's the whole thing. We're supposed to be noticing.
Mm-hmm. Well, like you said, and we talked about this in the last episode we did, you know, becoming an expert is the key.
Yeah.
And it's always remaining curious.
Remaining curious and being in real time every day, sometimes fully present, fully attentive in each other's eyes without an agenda. Mm-hmm. Because I'm telling you, most of the time, especially today, we are not present. Mm-hmm. We are not here. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's bothersome to a lot of people right now because all the distractions that are normally available to us, we still have a lot of them, right? But not distracted enough. And sometimes the chickens come home to roost. And now we're at home and we're with ourselves. That's something we didn't talk about. But just being with ourselves in quiet can really, as John Bradshaw said, deal with the hungry dogs at our heels, nipping at our heels. You know, so there's a lot to be said for learning how to be present and attentive with the people that you're in home with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. My mindset usually is like glass half full. And I know that there's a lot of devastating impacts, you know, I'm not dismissing anything that's going on out there, but, you know, I can't help but wonder what the positives that come out of these experiences are. And this whole idea of keeping people at home and having to sit with themselves in ways that they've never done before is uncomfortable and painful and traumatic for many people. Agreed. But at the same time, if your tendencies are to be able to look at this as learning experiences, you know, our understanding of ourselves as well as the people closest to us and everybody else, I can't help but think that there will be people coming out of this really growing through this experience.
Yes.
Because of being just having no choices, like just being forced, you know, we just all got put in a timeout. Let's make them to think about a lot of things in life, from jobs to relationships to whatever. Let's make the most of it so that, you know, whatever we don't want to see happen, we won't have to recycle any of that stuff out of there. And I think from an emotional level and a mental health level, and you know, this is May, it's Mental Health Awareness Month. You know, we are all tackling this in a way that some people could say, well, mental illness is not my issue, or I'm fine, I'm good enough. But I think many people realize that there's still some places for improvement, you know, in the relationships. And I would like to think that, you know, that there are many couples that can, that feel strained right now, that know that if they sat down together and said, listen, what are we going to do from this point forward? What did we realize is really important for us, for our families, for us together? And, you know, how are we going to make conscious efforts? And, you know, it is like, you know, that you do trainings all the time. It's efforts to reach out and say, listen, I'm really not feeling good right now. I'm feeling a little triggered, but I'll be fine. We're fine. Just give me a minute or whatever. And have another person go, I get you. I'll give you some space. You know, to be expressive in that way is not comfortable for everybody. But if once you start to do it, it does get easier. And it is work to do that. Yeah.
One other thing people can keep in mind, that of all the studies that have been done on happiness, the longest study is that happy people have at least one secure attachment relationship in their life. They also live longer and they're healthier. But also at the end of life, people generally lament, if they're going to lament about anything or be prideful about anything, it's their relationships. Mm-hmm. I did well. I had good kids, good loving family, good loving partner. You know, I loved my parents, whatever it is. Not, I wish I'd done this. I wish I didn't do this. I screwed this up. Now I've broken my relationships with my kids and so on. That is tragic, right? Mm-hmm. So now is a good time to make your peace, to say what you need to say, to apologize, because you never know. Mm-hmm. What happens next?
Right, exactly. Well, Stan, this has been amazing. I love talking to you so much.
I love talking to you too. You're such a blast.
I'm glad that you're doing well. I know that this is challenging. I appreciate you and everything that you do so much. And I'm sure there's a lot of people that appreciate you and the work that you and Tracy are still doing. And so thank you again. I'm always grateful.
Yeah. And I want your baffles in your microphone.
Oh, yeah. Well, maybe I can give you some tips on setting up the studio. But this is just glued on a wall. Yeah, they're awesome. Cool.
Thank you for listening to One Broken Mom. You can find podcast notes on my website at amiquiracone.com. And there I'll provide all links to all of the resources that we mentioned on the episode. Also, if you have any questions, comments, or ideas for other episodes, feel free to send me an email. And if you are interested in sponsoring the show, I'd love to have you be a part of the team. Finally, if you like what you hear, please share the podcast and leave a review so that others can find it. We are all here to get better together. I am the host, Ami Quirconi, and as always, I am super grateful to have you as a listener. Until next time, have a great day.